Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Tuesday, May 24th, 2022. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor, Bartrand Bui.
Hey, everyone.
HT, how is it going? How are you?
It's been a while, hasn't it? I'm doing well. You know, it's wedding season right now, so I've just been flitting back and forth between New York and Virginia, honestly, because that's where a lot of either family or friends are having weddings, funnily enough.
Oh, cool. So is there, how many do you have, I guess, like on the docket coming up? Do you have a bunch left or have you just been, you know, barreling through a bunch of them?
I'm halfway through right now. I went to two in the past like month and a half, and then I have two more, but they're actually, those last two are not actually till like September / October.
Okay.
So yes, I have a little bit of time before wedding season truly ends.
Nice. Yeah. I've been taking a quick little jaunt myself. My wife and I went to Destin, Florida, which is sort of on the end of the panhandle almost, spent some time at the beach there with her family. And it was really nice, getting to go down to the beach for a few hours and then, you know, spending, this was last week and I worked most of the week, but, you know, having a little bit of downtime to just chill out on the beach and like decompress and relax was super, rejuvenating. I would highly recommend it. If you're near the beach, go to the beach. I actually hadn't been, I moved to Florida back in 2020 and my wife and I had not been to the beach since.
You're in Florida, but you hadn't been to the beach.
I know. And we're only like 45 minutes, maybe an hour away from the beach, but we've just been so busy with everything, you know, just like life always gets in the way. So this is a reminder for myself as much as everybody else out there who has access to the beach, just go. It's really cool. So, HT, you've also been appearing on a podcast.
Hi, I'm talking about some men over at the Slash Film Cast. They invited me to talk about the Alex Garland film Men on their latest episode. I have linked it in the show notes, so check it out. But here are all my thoughts about Men, both the film and the gender alike in that podcast. I think I have cooled to it a little bit, but I still liked it, I think, a lot more than the majority of the of the people, I guess you would say, of the people. So, but yeah, it's got its problems, but of course, Men is very much an Alex Garland movie, so I have to appreciate for that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking that one out. I just wanted to mention quickly that I read a couple books sort of in and around my time on the beach. Joan Didion's The White Album and James Baldwin's Notes of a Native Son. I would recommend both. I think I had a little bit more respect for Notes of a Native Son and like pure enjoyment out of The White Album. I don't know. Have you read either of these books, HT?
I haven't read either of these, but they sound intriguing.
Yeah, the White Album in particular is one that's like, you know, I want to say that... what was her name? Aubrey Plaza's character in, the movie from several years ago that like, I think it was Peter's like favorite movie of the year. It's like a little indie movie.
Ingrid.
Yes. Something. Ingrid Goes West.
Ingrid Goes West.
That's the one.
Oh yeah. The movie that he fought very hard to be on our best movies of the decade list.
Yeah. It was almost a joke that Aubrey Plaza's character or like some of the characters in that movie were reading this book because it's sort of like this totemic California kind of book because the whole thing is like Joan Didion's experiences in the 60s and sort of in and around like what the culture was like in the aftermath of the Manson murders and sort of like how California changed from what was happening before and then how that event and that time period, that sort of tumultuous era shook up the culture. And then it's a lot of essays, really. And that's what James Baldwin's book, Notes of a Native Son, is, too. It's a collection of essays. So kind of weird books to read on the beach, I guess. But
I read an autobiography of like Ursula K. No, I read a collection of essays of Ursula K. Le Guin at the beach. So you can read whatever you want.
All right. There we go. I appreciate that. So, yeah, Baldwin's pieces that collection of essays is much more like there's almost like some literary criticism thrown in there. There's like his experiences in Paris, in, I want to say the 50s, and just like the, out of placeness that he sort of felt being an American, a Black American in Paris at that period and sort of grappling with the, with a lot of like bigger issues and Didion's stuff is much more like about her personal experience, like those essays are much more zeroed in than Baldwin's sort of like big picture kind of stuff. But anyway, both good books. Okay, let's move into what we've been watching. Ishii, you and I have been watching the new season of Stranger Things, which we can't really talk about yet, but I think that will explain why I don't have a ton to talk about here. You haven't been on the podcast for a while, so you actually do have a lot to talk about. But I will just blow through really quickly a few things that I have been watching. Chippendale Rescue Rangers. Have you seen this yet,
Ishii? Oh, actually, I have watched it. I forgot to note that I did. Yes, also, great movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, it's directed by Akiva Schaffer of The Lonely Island, and it stars the voice talents of John Mulaney and Andy Samberg and several other, you know, high-profile comedians. And I think it was Chris who said that it kind of reminded him as if something like if Shane Black directed Who Framed Roger Rabbit or something like that. And it definitely has that vibe because it's sort of like a 90s adventure mystery story. But also there's like a ton of meta humor and meta jokes and references to not just Disney canon, but all sorts of animation and animated properties on top of that. So
and not only is it a hybrid live action / animated film, it's also got a commentary on the CG animation craze, and it's like within the fabric of the movie itself, which is so fascinating the way that they did it and really funny and smart.
Yeah, definitely. So I would 100% recommend watching this. We laughed, my wife and I watched this together and laughed a lot. Like maybe it won't work for everybody. I don't know. I found it to be pretty accessible. Just from my perspective, but I don't know, maybe it might be a little bit too meta for its own good in certain places, but I thought it really, really worked for what it was trying to do. And I appreciated all the sort of deep cut references and all that kind of stuff. So it's a sort of a surface level movie for me. Like, I don't really think it's trying to do much in terms of like, you know, advancing any sort of like greater themes or like digging at anything, any sort of, you know, buried truths in the human experience or anything. But no, it's a very like, if we're looking at all of the times that Disney has resurrected its own intellectual property and tried to capitalize on that to tell new stories, I think this is the most purely enjoyable of those to me anyway.
Yeah, and it's both a satire and also a love letter in a way to the properties and a satire of like the reboot mania. And I think the way it balances those two things without feeling either too aggrandizing or too mean-spirited is pretty like kind of amazing.
Yeah, definitely. So I also watched this movie called Mad Holiday that aired on Turner Classic Movies recently. It's directed by this guy named George B. Seitz. This is from 1936. And the reason that I watched this is because I read the premise and I was like, oh, I'm instantly hooked by this. So it's about an actor who plays a film detective who is the main character in a series of novels. And he is bored with playing this character over and over again. He's sort of like sick of the whole thing. And he decides to take a cruise ship and like go on a vacation on this cruise and get away from the whole thing and leave his whole world behind and like walk away from his Hollywood career, basically. But on the ship, there is a young woman there, and he realizes that this woman is the author of the mystery novels that encase the character that he plays in the movies. And then the two of them actually stumble into a real life murder mystery on this cruise ship. The description, as I just described it, is maybe a little bit more entertaining than the actual movie. Like the film can't quite live up to the promise of that premise, but it is still relatively enjoyable. It's only like an hour and 10 minutes long or something like that. So if you are intrigued by that at all, there's some pretty good stuff in it. It's not like a life-changing movie experience or like one of my favorite films from the 30s, but Mad Holiday is worth a watch, I would say. And then the last thing that I watched is this movie called New York Ninja. Have you ever heard of this, HD?
I've never heard of this.
Okay, I'm trying to look up what year. This is a complicated movie. So it came out in 2021, but it was actually originally shot in 1984 by this guy named John Liu, who also starred in the movie. And it's one of those movies that like it was never finished, and the footage just laid dormant in a basement somewhere or whatever. And then a different company acquired it recently and this guy named Curtis Spieler, quote unquote, redirected the movie. So they didn't have any of the audio, the original audio that was captured in the 80s. So they had to do a whole basically reconstruction. They ADR'd all of the dialogue and they got a bunch of different actors to come in and do, not like big name actors, but modern people to come in and provide all the voiceovers for all the different characters. And it's sort of like a not quite sleazy, but not quite clean exploitation movie about a guy whose wife is murdered in essentially the opening scene of the movie. Mm-hmm. And then he takes on this almost like this mantle of that. He becomes like a superhero type of character, like a vigilante character named the New York Ninja. And he just goes around like dispensing justice to the gangs that are, kidnapping women and doing terrible things all throughout the city. There's also a guy who I want to say his name was like Plutonium Man or something like that. This guy who like has developed some sort of addiction to plutonium, and he's like the supervillain of the whole piece. It's a really weird movie.
What is this movie?
Yeah, it's very bizarre, and it's really like cheaply made, and in a way that I generally like movies like this. I don't know if you ever saw Miami Connection, HD. That seems like a movie that you would really, really enjoy, because it's a similar thing.
Yeah.
Where it came out in, or it was originally shot in the 80s. That one actually was not finished until years later, but it was completed by the same people, I think, that originally shot it, decades beforehand. So there's a consistency in tone and like an intent that remained sort of tied to the heart of the movie in Miami Connection that I felt in a way that I didn't really feel with New York Ninja, where it sort of feels like somebody else came in and finished this thing. And because the footage is kind of crappy, honestly, it kind of feels like some of the personality is missing from this piece, because I would have really enjoyed to seeing like what the original vision of this thing was going to be with the original people. But they just like ran out of money and their production company closed down and they had to sell off this footage or like just abandon it basically. So I on one hand, I'm glad that something like this exists, because for all the people who worked on it, it must be cool to see this thing finally come to light, all these years later. But at the same time, it feels like the authorial intent is a little bit compromised, because it's split between two different eras. So this was also on Turner Classic Movies, so I'm not sure if this is streamable anywhere, but it's called New York Ninja if you want to check that out. HD, what have you been watching?
I've been watching a lot of stuff. So it's been, I think, more than a month since I've been here, so I'm going to kind of speed run through a bunch of these. But first, I want to talk about RRR, the Indian Telugu language film directed by S.S. Rajamouli, which is sort of the surprise global blockbuster hit of the year. And I saw it about a month ago, and I'm about to see it again on June 1st, because it's coming back to theaters in the U.S. for one night only, because this movie is amazing, Ben. This movie might be the best movie I've ever seen.
Wow.
It's as if the filmmaker, whose name I just said, I forgot, Rajamouli, was like, what if I put everything that they ever done in film on the screen and just did it 10 times over, turned up to 11, just this maximalist epic that is full of melodrama, betrayal, musical sequences, the romance of the century. It's incredible. So basically, it tells the story of these two Indian revolutionaries during British colonial period, and it actually kind of imagines that they were friends together, because these two revolutionaries were active at the same time period, but is never been confirmed, or there's no evidence that they actually met.
Oh, so they're playing real characters.
They're playing real characters.
Or real people from human history. Yeah. Okay.
And this movie imagines, what if they were best friends? And not just what if they were best friends. What if they were the best of friends, and they were embroiled in this this conspiracy and assassination and incredible romance that ends in betrayal. It's I feel like I'm not explaining it well, just because it's so amazing. But yes, they're the way that they imagine these two meeting and becoming the best of friends is through this most like testosterone laden sequence ever. And it's so stylish. It's so visually stimulating, overstimulating even. I have seen it compared to a Zack Snyder movie, If It Were Good.
Wow.
which I can kind of actually see that. But yeah, it's an incredible film that I cannot overstate how much the experience of watching this is just like a shot of adrenaline to the heart.
Man, I can't wait to see this. So we should say that a version of this is streaming on Netflix right now, right?
It's the Hindi language version, though. So it's not in the original Telugu language. And with the Hindi dub, it actually changes a few things. I was talking to Siddhant Adlaka, who has been a big proponent of RR. Apparently there's like a few minute changes, and the songs are actually quite different because they changed the lyrics. So the big viral song from this movie, which is called Natu Natu, I think it means like dance, dance or something. It changes to Nacho Nacho, which is in Hindi. So it might be a little bit just different in like those kind of regards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this movie was not in theaters around me, and I saw that it's on Netflix. So I immediately added it to my queue. It's also 3 hours long. So I have not had time to watch it yet, but I plan on doing that sometime soon. And then you mentioned that it's coming back to theaters for one night only. I think it's June 1st is the day that that's happening. And it is coming to a theater near me. I just can't decide whether, because it's like, I think it's one night only, which is like a Wednesday, I think the June 1st date is, if I'm getting my dates correctly.
Yes.
And then it's only at one time, like 6:30 p.m. or something in the theater near me. So I don't know if that's limited to the theatrical sort of landscape right around me in North Florida or what. But it's just like so specific, and like, do I have to go rearrange my entire night to go see this 3 hour epic movie, or can I just watch it whenever I get some free time and watch it on Netflix at home? I don't know. But I wanted to put that out there so people can make the decision for themselves. If you want to see it theatrically, it sounds like you'll have the opportunity in a lot of cities anyway, more than just like where it got its original theatrical run. So
yes. And I do know it's actually streaming in Telugu, in a streaming service that I don't know off the top of my head. Let me see. I'm going to look it up right now in a really fun piece of podcasting.
Yeah, I think Chris was saying like, oh, it is streaming in the proper language, but you have to have a subscription to this one service, and it's not like one of the normal traditional
service called ZEE5. It's a relatively new Indian streaming service. So yes, you'll have to have a subscription to that.
Okay. And then real quick, before we move off this topic, HD, how familiar are you with movies of this type? Because for me, like, I think I saw this movie called Rowdy Rathor in 2012 in theaters, because I saw the trailer and was like, this looks like a good entrance to the sort of what I perceive to be like over the top action, just like super highly stylized Bollywood kind of action film genre that I had not really partaken in before. And I really enjoyed that theatrical experience, a decade ago now, but I have not really gone beyond that. This is not a genre that I'm super familiar with. So when you're talking about this movie being so, you know, over the top and just, ridiculous in the best possible ways, is that, do you have enough base of a knowledge to compare that to other movies of this type and say that RRR goes even beyond that? Or is this just like sort of this year's version of the sort of zany Bollywood action extravaganza?
I'll admit that I have a pretty service level a knowledge of Bollywood films, but I have seen a handful, enough to say that I think that this blows them all out of the water.
Wow.
RRR
okay.
is just more high octane and more stylized than any other Bollywood movie that I've seen. I've seen like a couple of ones like Doom, which is actually, I recommend that one because it's the Bollywood knockoff version of the Fast and Furious franchise.
Sweet.
Has some great songs as well. And I've seen a couple of like the epic romances, that I can't name off the top of my head. But yeah, a couple I've seen. I have a lot of Pakistani friends that we will have like sleepovers and we'll watch like a Bollywood movie and it will be like a 3 hour long thing.
Awesome. Okay, so that's RRR, and yeah, it sounds like HT would definitely recommend this. I'm guessing this is going to be a major player when it comes to our big discussion at the end of the year of like favorite movie moments. So,
oh yes, and it's already on our best movies of 2022 so far list too.
Oh yeah, we'll link to that in the show notes so you can check that out too. What else have you been watching, HT?
I've also watched The Northman. That was a while ago, right? That's how long it's been since I've been on this podcast. Good movie. My least favorite of Robert Edgar's films, but still something so new and wild and artistic and ballsy in terms of just revenge flicks. So there's still so much to love and to like about The Northman, which has an incredible Alexander Skarsgård performance at the center of it. You can check out my review on slashfilm.com. I also saw Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness, and I reviewed that for Slash Film, which you can also check out. I liked it. I like the Sam Raimi of it all. I know I'm warmer on it than a lot of people are, but I did think that the Raimi-ness of that third act really saved it from being just another cog in the Marvel machine, even if it is very explicitly a cog in the Marvel machine. So, you know, I enjoyed it for what it was. I'm not the hugest defender of it, but still, good time at the movies. More good times at the movies. I watched the new A24 family film, the first A24 family film called Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. And this is by far one of my favorite movies of the year. It's based off of a series of viral short films directed by Dean Fleischer Kamp, who returned to direct the future film version of this with Jenny Slate starring as Marcel, which is a one-inch tall shell that is sentient and talks in the most adorable voice, but has been abandoned by his entire family apart from his elderly grandmother. And after he meets Dean Fleischer Kamp's character, which is a director who decides to do a documentary on Marcel, Marcel vows to find his family and use the power of the internet, who have all fallen in love with Marcel's charms, to try to find them and reunite with them once again. It's just a completely sweet, wonderful, lovely little movie that kind of reminds me of a Studio Ghibli movie, if you were to put it under a millennial filter. It's got this, yeah, very wholesome, very cozy feeling to it while still having that undercurrent of melancholy that I love in a lot of my Ghibli films that suddenly just take you by surprise and suddenly you're crying at the end over a shell. So it's incredible. This one comes out June 24th. I saw it quite early. So I recommend seeing Marcel the Shell with Shoes On in theaters when you get the chance.
I saw a couple of these short films that this was sort of like sprung forth from many, many years ago, maybe 10 years ago or something at this point. And I remember them, and I haven't seen them since, but I remember them being very quiet and subdued and, yeah, kind of like you're saying, just like, you know, they sort of lull you in with the vibes a little bit. And does this movie, I haven't seen a trailer or anything for this movie yet. Does this movie sort of capture you in the same way? Does it have that sort of low key, almost like, you know, what it reminds me of is like the rock sequence from Everything Everywhere All at Once, where it just like gives you an opportunity to pause for a minute in the craziness of life. Does it have that feel to it?
Oh yeah, it really maintains that. And it's kind of the whole sort of thematic through line of this film too, is that Marcel's whole thing is, you know, appreciating life as it is. And that's kind of the feeling that the whole film gives to you too. So yes, very much that kind of lulling you into this sense of security and warmth.
Excellent.
So other movies I saw, I also watched the Bob's Burgers movie, which is coming to theaters this Friday. Good movie. That's just a good time at the movie theater, but it is kind of basically an extra long episode of the TV series, but it still is a fun time. It's a noir inspired riff on the show where the Belcher family have to figure out the mystery of a body that has appeared in a sinkhole in front of their store.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So it gets quite dark. But it's all about them trying to raise enough funds to keep the store open, or else they might get their store repossessed. And the murder is all part of that as well. But it's still like just as fun and funny and witty as the show is, which I've only seen like a handful of episodes from as well. I mostly watched it in college. But yeah, a fun good time, especially for fans of Bob's Burgers. And if you're not a fan, you can still enjoy it too. It's very good for newcomers to the series. Cool. You can check out my review on slashfilm.com. It's AAPI Heritage Month. Ben, happy AAPI Heritage Month. I recently published a list on Slash Film of the best AAPI movies that you can stream right now. I basically limited to movies either directed by or starring Asian American casts. I included Better Luck Tomorrow, which is a movie that I saw for the first time just now for this list.
Oh man, this is a great movie. What'd you think about it?
I loved it. My God, Justin Lin just completely out of the gate running with this film, which follows a bunch of bored, overachieving Asian American students in high school who turn to a life of petty crime of selling computer parts and various other things. But their crimes soon escalate and results in the murder of a fellow student. And it's so great. It's so energetic. It's so it's got that, you know, that freneticism to it, mm-hmm. that feels very of the time, like early 2000s, late 90s, very yellow hued, very sweaty. And it feels like that is just – that energy is just coursing through its veins. And it's a fantastic movie that I think was pretty groundbreaking for at the time. It showed – you know, Asian characters who were really lacking in that kind of morality that the stereotype typically associated them with. So that was just exciting to see. And it feels still so fresh now as it did, I assume, when it came out. So
yeah, it came out in what, like 99 or so? Or yeah, 2002, I guess it was. Mm-hmm. What did you think about Sung Kang in this? Because there's been a lot of theories about how he's playing the same character in the Fast and Furious movies.
Well, the Wikipedia page links to his character as being the same character in the Fast and Furious movies. So I don't doubt that he at least took the template for this character and just kind of, Justin Lin did, and just kind of brought him over to Fast and Furious. He's so cool.
Yeah.
So just like oozing coolness and oozing all that charisma and every scene that he's in. John Cho is great too. He's also in this film. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because Sung Kang and John Cho are obviously not high school aged when they're starring in this film. I think John Cho would star in Harold and Kumar literally a year later. And Sung Kang is like obviously not a high school like senior. And you're like, wow, why is he hanging out with all these kids? But other than that, like, that didn't take me out of the film at all. I really, really enjoyed it. So Better Luck Tomorrow. Streaming now.
On Roku, it looks like.
Roku, yes. You can look at my list to see where it's streaming.
And quick shout out to Perry Shen as well, who plays like the main character in this, because I know that that Sung Kang and John Cho are like the big names from this movie, or they would go on to become big names. But I really enjoyed Perry Shen's performance as well. He's like the sort of center of the story. So
yeah, he's got like a nice wide-eyed sort of countenance to him, and mm-hmm. he's great. So other movies I saw, actually that's the movies for now. I've caught up with Better Call Saul, only season 5 though. I'm not caught up with season 6, which I know just hit its mid-season finale, and I've been straying away from spoilers as much as possible because I know it's incredible. God, season 5 is amazing. Ben, do you watch Better Call Saul? You watch it, right?
No, I haven't. I mean, my wife and I watched the first season. We're huge Breaking Bad fans. We watched the first season, and like the whole Chuck thing with like the aluminum foil and like the or whatever it was, like metal mm-hmm. Aversion, and like I just could not get into the first season. And I know. I've heard from so many people like this is one of the best shows on TV, and I believe all of you when you say this. But the problem is we watched season 1 as it was airing, and that was what, 2013 or something like that, maybe 2015, I don't know, a long time ago, many, many years ago. So the notion now of having to rewatch a season that we, my wife and I both, like, did not connect with at all in order to get to the good stuff is just so daunting when there are so many other things to watch. So maybe one day we'll eventually get to it. I know I'm missing out on like a cultural touchstone here with this decision.
Some of the best character writing I've seen on TV. Yeah. Like, honestly, it's incredible, Ben.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe like next year or something we'll do it. I don't remember when is the back half of season 6 supposed to come out?
That's a good question.
Is that later this year?
I know it's like later this said, year. I okay, think they're just splitting right. it up by a few months. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way I'm gonna have time to catch up on everything in between there. But it sounds like you will, because you all you have to do is catch up on one half of a season now left, yes. right?
God, yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. I'm so scared for Kim Wexler. One of the best TV characters ever as well. Just great stuff.
Okay.
Just the American tragedy of Better Call Saul, I think, is so much more pronounced in this show than it was in Breaking Bad. And that's all I'll say to try to convince you for one last time.
Well, something that I didn't need any convincing to watch was Star Trek season 2. And I know you didn't either, because you were a big fan of season 1, yes. just like I was.
Oh, God, Star Trek season 2. Just as fun, just as charming, just as great as season 1. I wasn't sure whether they could maintain it for another season, just because season 1 is such this great self-contained romance. I loved how it jumped from season to season with these sort of brief brushes between these two characters who only see each other like every 3 months or every 6 months even, and still like strike up such an enduring romance, and one that's so funny too. So I wondered how they could pull it off in with them being in a relationship in season 2, and they do. It's so good. It does kind of fall into the pitfalls of like what happens after people are in a relationship. You insert all of these needless conflicts, but there are not to the point where it's actually annoying and contrived. Right. You know, it feels very much in line with the characters as we've come to know and love them.
100%. Yeah, I just really enjoyed spending more time with these people, even though some of the things that they were doing, I kind of rolled my eyes at a little bit. Like, I would say that season 2 is not quite as essential as season 1, just in terms of like the overall narrative that they're telling. But it's just so much fun to be back in that world and spend time with these people.
I really love the final scene in the lake. I thought it was such a funny riff off of those kind of big romantic scenes that you see with those big gestures. Mm-hmm. It was done so well and so funny. So I really like season 2.
Yeah, good stuff.
Streaming now on HBO Max. Another show, that I caught up on very quickly was Bridgerton season 2. I watched the first season actually like half paying attention, just because I did not care about season 1. I only wanted to get to season 2 because that particular type of relationship, which is the mutual pining relationship, where it's all really intense, loaded stares and brushes of the fingertips, is exactly my cup of tea.
So that's what happens in season 2?
That's all of season 2. It's all loaded gazes and stares. And I ate it all up. It's still not a great show. It's still a pretty bad show. It's trashy in like a really fun way. But I will say in season 2, it does kind of take the premise a little too far, where you're just like, okay, we get it. You guys like can't be together and you guys keep staring at each other. Like, stop. It's got to like evolve that relationship a little bit somehow, especially over the course of 8 episodes. But for the most part, the chemistry between the two characters who are at the center of it, and I'm going to try to remember their names because I don't remember. The characters who are played by, let's see, the cast is Jonathan Bailey and Simone Ashley. Their chemistry is off the charts. So it was really enjoyable. Bridgerton season 2. I wouldn't recommend it as highly as everything else that I just mentioned. But it's good if you are hungover from a night of karaoke.
Oh man, put that in the trailer. That sounds like a great pull quote. I love that. Okay, cool. Yeah, I think that's going to bring us to the end of today's episode. I'm going to link to as many of these things as I can in the show notes, just sort of scattered all throughout. We have a lot of reviews. I'm going to link to HT's big pop culture imports column that she wrote with 25 AAPI movies and TV shows to stream right now, which is a beast of an article, but like in the best way. And there's so much good stuff in here that, I mean, I think both of us can say that, like, we recommend this stuff almost without reservation. So, so many good things and definitely worth digging into as this month sort of rounds out and comes to a close. So, yeah, that'll pretty much do it for us. You can find more about everything that we talked about at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for the episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps, and send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at peter@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, spread the word. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.